Hey, everybody, it's JT, and this is a special version of Barbecue Nation. It is brought to you in part by Painted Hills Natural Beef. Beef you can be proud to serve your family and friends. That's Painted Hills Natural Beef.
Welcome to Barbecue Nation with JT's After Hours. Conversation that took place after the broadcast ended.
Hey, everybody, it's JT, and this is a special version of Barbecue Nation. It is brought to you in part by Painted Hills Natural Beef. Beef you can be proud to serve your family and friends. That's Painted Hills Natural Beef. Welcome back to Barbecue Nation. I'm JT with Miss Leanne and Mr. Homer from the Turn It, Don't Burn It studios. We've got a lot of holidays, a lot of barbecuing coming up for most people. Leanne and I do it all year round. You do it all year round. But that's coming up. It's here. I mean, it's just here. We just knocked out Memorial Day weekend. What'd you cook for Memorial Day? Well,
we hit out. Memorial Day is a weird thing around here. We have lots of people come to our country because they like us, and we have a biker rally comes out here. Traffic picks up. It gets crazy. We typically just kind of hide out. Of course, a lot of times it's raining here in the Northwest, but we hide out. I cook some burgers and I cook some pork ribs on Friday with that pig powder came out just right. Did I do anything in between? We did a chuck roast actually in the Ninja of all crazy things.
Yeah,
which is real anti Memorial Weekend smoke, but anyhow, it still came out perfect. So that's what we felt up to.
And Miss Leanne, what did you knock out on the grill?
Well, I had to celebrate National Hamburger Day on Sunday, so that was a given. Aside from, you know, being at the food truck this weekend, did a reverse sear skirt steak.
Oh, cool.
Which was delicious.
Delicious.
I love skirt steak. Absolutely. That's another one of those meats that really didn't cost a whole lot back in the day, and now it's gone up. Still reasonable, but delicious. That's what I did. How about you, Jeff? What did you cook?
I did. What the hell did I do? Well, first I figured out that I ran out of pellets, so I had to go get some pellets for the pellet grill. And then I thought I would be a real smarty pants, and I cleaned my gas grill, and now it doesn't work.
It happens more than you think.
I got the pressure washer on that thing. It looks shiny, but it's not working. Anyway, did some steaks, did a couple Painted Hills ribeyes, did some chicken wings, made some candied bacon because I had some left over from the TV show the other day, so we use that up. And you know, it was just a generally, and we're kind of like Will and Gab. We hang pretty close on Memorial Day. We don't go out and venture out to the wild side. You know, did some work here on the yards and the house, and watched a couple movies, and that's actually kind of the way we like it. So,
I went to the driving range.
You did.
Awesome.
I did.
Are you getting tuned up to do the golf show with me?
I'm trying. Awesome. I seem to do really well when that truck drives across and I have something to aim at for some reason. I can hit the balls really well so I encourage him to zigzag, but he doesn't listen. But yeah, I went to the driving range because it was really too hot to play 18 or even 9. I'm trying to get my golf game better. So that's
You come up, you will be playing a round at the Kinzu Open.
I can't wait. I'm prepping for that.
So yeah. The Kinzu is quite the golf course, and Will has a lifetime membership there, so we can play. Yeah,
I pay for it and then I don't go. So yeah, that's it.
You know, I want to get back on something here a little bit, just for a minute. The imports.
Are we doing after hours now? Or
are we
on the show? Okay.
Yeah. We're still on after hours.
I just wanted to know if we were open.
Asleep when I did the intro?
You kind of introed it a little nonchalant, didn't you?
Right. Yeah.
Oh, by the way, it's after hours. Okay.
Well, it's kind of cash this morning. You talk about import beef, and I was being sarcastic, but not about the quality. I had some people send me some samples. The beef was from Venezuela, and they were out there, you know, hyping this stuff as the best thing since sliced bread. It was so different and tougher than hell, if I remember right, because we cooked it at Will's house, and it just wasn't working. And I think once you get into eating a quality beef like Painted Hills, you set your standards pretty high. But even thinking that I could do something with this, like on a show or something, it was pretty tough. Not just the beef, but it was pretty tough to work with. And Will made some comments, and Gabrielle made some other comments. Oh, I remember. But what I'm trying to get at is the quality, and you said consistency, and consistency is good. And that's one of the things when you import products, especially agricultural products that are already processed and stuff, you're never sure, 100% sure of that quality you're going to get. Because I've done a lot of them. I've tried a lot of them. To me, it's kind of the same with everybody's pitching the Wagyu stuff. Wagyu's just very fatty beef to me. That's if you love it.
I'm going to start a huge debate if I start talking about that. But I will say I experienced a piece of Wagyu that I ended up not even finishing and throwing out. And it wasn't my cooking method. I know a lot of people say you have to cook it right.
Yeah.
You know, and I cooked it hot and fast in an iron skillet, you know, and no, and maybe it was just a piece of meat that I had, but it was inedible.
I'm with you. Yep. I'm with you. And if people want to take a shot at us, go ahead.
But no, they're gonna.
But you know, I saw somebody the other day on Twitter. They had these they look like little square steaks.
Yeah.
Kind of like the little ones you
cube
send
steaks?
Me. No, they're 2 inches by 2 inches by 2 inches type thing.
White Castle?
Good on you. But they had them out there. This was on social media, and they were saying, aren't these beautiful? I thought it was spam. Not computer spam, but spam out of a can that they'd wiped off all the gelatinous crap off of. And I looked at it, and they were saying, oh, no, aren't these beautiful Wagyu steaks? And I'm sorry, folks. You can be mad at us or mad at me if you want. Don't be mad at Leanne or Will, but I just can't do that.
I think, you know? I saw those. I didn't look that up, but that has to be either out of the brisket or trying to upgrade a top sirloin or something solid like that. You wouldn't, the things I'm thinking is, I think about a Wagyu animal and all the pieces that come out of a steer.
Right.
You wouldn't chop up a high value rib steak or a New York or a tenderloin. All those can sell on their own. But then you get into other pieces. You got a clawed heart and a brisket and a chuck eye. And you got all these other things that you got to market somehow. The Wagyu guy's going to have to
do
something.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
The only thing that saves the Wagyu guy is a Wagyu animal doesn't have a butt.
What do you mean it doesn't have a butt?
Well, every animal we've domesticated, we've built a butt on. A rear end, the rounds and the back end. Because there's more weight there than there is in the shoulder or build that. You look at a deer. Look at a giraffe as an extreme, of course,
sure.
But every wild animal has no butt. A buffalo has no butt. A beef cow has a butt, has a round, has all this meat in the back end because we want meat on an animal. And so if you look at a Wagyu, and I should pull some pictures up here, actually, because we saw them in Australia, they've got no butt. They're like a wild animal.
Well, how did you create the butts?
Breeding.
Just breeding? Through selective
breeding for thousands of years. They've bred animals to have, like a hog. You know, hogs they used to breed. Well, they still breed, you know, hogs, but they've refined them now so perfect that they're all perfect. But they breed them for that. All that stuff, the 4-H judge goes to class and tells the kids, look at this animal and it's better conformation because of this and that and that and this. And all the stuff that the race guys bet on the horses down at the track, all the confirmation things. Well, that's the same thing for cattle. But but a wild animal doesn't have a butt, and a Wagyu doesn't have a butt. But they turned it into Wagyu burgers, and they sell Wagyu burgers every damn where. I just don't know how they don't, they're not so fatty. You can't eat them. That's the part I don't haven't figured out.
Yeah, they did that with the, you know, show horses and a couple of the breeds who shall remain nameless. But all of a sudden they came out with these horses that had, you know, elephant butts, special type thing. But, and they really looked out of balance. I wouldn't want to try to ride one of the bastards. But this is after hours, so I can say that. It's just through the breeding, but the balance too, you know, and getting more meat on the carcass, on the skeletal structure and all that like that. But if you saw those same pictures I did, you would have swore it was Spam out of a can that it looked just like it.
I believe.
And I'm not. OK, we're done ripping on the Wagyu people. Who should we rip on next?
The Spam people.
The Spam people. I actually
wait, we need somewhere to go with all that cleanup.
Okay. I happen to like Spam. So
I do too.
Let's shut it down there.
I do too. But it's just anyway.
Oh goodness.
Do you think that as time goes on, put on your Kreskin hat, as I always ask you to do, you know, you can go, you can walk down the canned food aisle, and up on the top, you can see these little glass jars of Hormel beef, sliced beef. Mm-hmm. I think they processed one pen load of cattle 75 years ago, and they're still selling.
Turn it around. You go same shelf you're talking about. Turn it around, and you're going to see product of Brazil on the back.
Yeah,
really.
Because you've been able to buy cooked product from Brazil for a long time. All that cheap jerky you get in the big 5 pound bags or 1 pound bags—that's all Brazilian. And so we've been able to get cooked product for a long time. We just couldn't get fresh product because of foot and mouth disease. But they got that under control for the most part. And so now we're getting fresh. But that's what those that stuff comes from. And I'm with you. You're right. The production date is 10 years ago, and the out Best Buy dates still to come, you know.
Yeah, August 42. So although when I was in Brazil, I did have a couple of really nice fillets. One thing they were good about is, and we don't see it much in this country, is carpaccio, you know, the thinly sliced raw beef, and you put a little lime juice on it or whatever. Yeah. I thought that was pretty good down there. I'm not sure what animal it was. They said it was beef, but you know, you didn't know. It was late at night, and but it was pretty good. I just wonder if we're ever going to see more processed beef, canned products coming out of this country, maybe for export. I don't know. To me, it kind of doesn't make much sense.
A threat of war, there might be. I don't think so. I think people are still strong on that health kick thing.
Could be. I mean, and you never know what's really going to happen, but
Go ahead.
No.
Keep your thought. Well, I just thinking about, you know, how you get beef to stay around because you use preservatives in it, right? You use nitrates in it.
Right.
And so we make a hot dog that has a celery salt and Eskimo. I call it celery salt and Eskimo powder, but celery salt and something else that fakes the nitrate, because you can't get people to eat hot dogs and cook them. And if you don't cook them, you might get botulism. Okay. Right. So here's my short math, right? France just came out with a thing that said they want to reduce the use of nitrates in their food like 85% in the next 5 years.
Yeah. Huh.
So they obviously don't care whether people live or not, because they're going to get rid of it. They're going to blow these nitrates out of the system, and botulism is going to learn to run wild. I mean, it's just but that is the consumer movement is to get away from preserved and stored and preserved. And yet they don't know where they're headed. I mean, they want it out in a record time. It was crazy. When I heard the article, I'm like, whoa, this is looking for trouble, because but science, you know what? You put you put an idea out there and you tell them this is the way it's going to be, the science will figure it out. People will figure it out somehow. They'll figure it out.
Well, I did a story yesterday on something I came across, that there's a company that's partially based in San Francisco and partially in Germany, and they are making disposable terracotta coffee cups, because we do 5 billion pounds of disposable coffee cups now. So you can drink the cup, drink out of the cup and throw it on the ground, step on it, it's dirt, because it's made out of dirt, salt, and water.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't drink coffee anyway, so I don't care. But I just thought that was, you know, they've been using
it. I don't know how to answer this, because I don't want people to throw mud at me too much, but you know, they've been hauling garbage into the county north of us here for
a long time,
35 years. Right now they haul 500 car trains a week into this hole. Okay.
Wow.
This hole is 6 miles. It's not a hole physically. It's just a flat spot. That's a basin. It's 6 miles off the main highway. I mean, it's not very far, and I still can't see it.
Yeah. That's a lot of garbage.
There's a lot of space in this world. There's a lot of garbage. There's a lot of space. But the fact that they've invented a coffee cup that'll cost you 25 cents more, or 50 cents more, or 80 cents more, that's really about the money they created. They created a sellable item that they can sell to you or to whoever, and they can get their margin going by.
Well, and it's going to make its debut later this year, that terracotta cup I was talking about.
Yeah.
Guess where?
Where? Whole Foods?
No, no. California.
Oh, yeah. California. Yeah, sure.
Well, in Marin County and some of those, you know.
Yep. So, yep.
And if you're listening to us down there, sorry, but you earned that. So
yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. Somebody's going to make money and they're going to say we're doing something great here for the world. I know. And it's all just about this.
I know it is.
So anyway,
we pick up the trash here on the highway. Our Painted Hills likes to have our name out on the highway, you know, and so we pick up the trash out on the highway, and the girls do. I don't get out there near enough, and they ought to kick me in the ass. But anyhow, what pisses me off is I hear all about plastics, right? Every time I bend down to pick up a piece of plastic, it disintegrates in my hands. The sun breaks down the plastic. It doesn't last 1,000 years. It might last 2 months. And it's gone. And it just pisses me off that somebody's talked you into believing that it's going to be in your landfill for 1,000 years. So you're going to make corn plastic trays. You're going to use the corn I was complaining about earlier today.
Right.
you guys also have the Merton Homer biodegradable disposal site there.
That's right. Yep.
I'll tell Leanne that story when we're off the air.
Oh, there you go.
Like that. What do you do when, and you and I have talked about this before, and probably should have brought this up in the regular show, but this is the last hard question for you, okay? Or not hard, but when you get product with age on it in the warehouse.
Yes.
And you're very particular about that. You know, they can only stay so long. I'm sure it's different for different cuts and things. But after a while, you go, I still got 5-10 cases of this left, which doesn't sound like much. But when you look at the prices there, you've lost, you know, $5,000 or whatever it is like that, because you can't sell it to the retailers anymore. What do you do with it? You can't repurpose it.
Well, everybody's got a price, and every retail guy. See, this is the key to this is the best part of what we do, about the fact that we touch so many different types of stores. We have our store relationships are really small. I think the biggest one we have has 20 locations, and he kind of stays on his own plan, and the warehouse has a problem with anything over 30 days old. So that's a limitation. But we work with a lot of small little butcher shop guys, right? Mm-hmm. Even your guy at Cutsforth and Canby, you know, he's free reign. He's got the
he's not my guy.
he's got the reins to do what he wants in his shop.
Right.
And so when it gets to the point where you got four cases or three cases of something that, geez, I need to just give me $2 out of it. I just get it. Just, it's got to be gone. Or I got four of them that are 6 weeks old. What will you take? What will you give me for them? That's how that works. And that's how those little guys stay in business. A lot of times, you know, you can't come to my front door and buy my product from the front door all the time and survive. You got to have an ad, or you got to be able to know how to clean up at the back door sometimes too. And so you have all those. I don't think a food truck works that way, but at the end of the day, you got extra food laying around. Do you sell it for half price to the back door? Or it seems to me like that's what you do, because your refrigerator at home's only so big. I don't know how.
I was going to say, do you make accommodations for food trucks?
Well, we typically work with a distributor, a food service distributor, and he figures out how to work with the food truck, because the food truck honestly won't move enough tonnage to warrant our distributions. See, we work mostly with grocery distribution, who has a 1500 or 1000 or 1500 pound drop minimum, right? Mm-hmm. Food truck doesn't have storage for 1500 pounds of meat, I don't suppose, but I could be wrong. Could be a big one. But that's typically what we work with. So then you work with a food service distributor who takes boxes apart, delivers single ribeyes around town, distributes three chubs out of a box that holds six. He's the guy who makes that happen, and he's also the guy who actually defends Leanne in this case where. Me, I'm taking care of the big guy and I'm trying to manage apportioning, you know, not having enough of everything and having too much of some. And he's the guy who has her interest in mind and makes sure that, by golly, I know she's going to call me every twice a week and I'm going to need this box of this twice a week. And by golly, I got to have it. And that's they're expensive. Nobody likes a food service distributor in the middle,
right?
But we kind of got to have them, because they're in there to protect your interest against the packer who doesn't always have your interest.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Give our listeners one piece of advice when they're dealing with rising food costs from your position. Now there's a head scratcher.
Yeah, it is. I don't know what their budget is, but I'm still going to go. I'm going to go to the grave thinking that your food budget is still awful small in the grand scheme of things. Hmm. Last I heard a year and a half ago, it was 9%. If it's double, it's 18%. 18% of your budget is your food. You're going to spend 18% of your budget on the third most important thing in your life.
Yeah.
Oxygen, water, and food.
And Barbecue Nation.
Buy what you want, eat what you want, turn Netflix off. I don't know. I asked a friend this the other day. Okay. Go down any street, any town you want to, go down the main drag and drive along down the main drag and look left and look right. There's McDonald's and there's Taco Bell and then there's a Ross Dress for Less and there's a Fred Meyer and there's a this. Tell me which one of those stores is feeling a recession and going to close the doors. Not one of them.
Yeah.
They all have people crawling in and out of them. So I don't know what's going on, but I know that there's plenty of money to be spent. So that's all I do know. There's plenty of money to be spent.
There you go. Will Homer, COO. Painted Hills Natural Beef, friend of the show, friend of mine, friend of Leanne's, and a very, 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 I was just going to pay you a compliment and say a very wise man, but we thank you for that.
Thank you.
Miss Leanne, it's always a pleasure. Even if you can't plug in your headphones.
Okay. All right. That's
moving on.
Come by Fossil and see me. Come see me. If you come through Fossil, stop by.
Oh, we will
make it.
Definitely. We're gonna. Here's a little announcement. It's not in the main show, so I can say this. But Leanne's gonna be working with me on the television version of my golf show, Grilling at the Green, and one of our stories is gonna be about Painted Hills and the Kinzu Golf Course over there. So we will be over there sometime in the early fall, And because it's beautiful over there. And we'll have some fun. And maybe she'll cook something. I'll be her sous chef for the folks at Painted Hills.
So, awesome.
Okay. Amazing. Thank you for listening, everybody. Thanks to the crew here. And we'll be back next week with another edition of After Hours. Until then, remember our motto, turn it, don't burn it, and be kind. Take care, everybody.